You're listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK. Welcome to the AHDB podcast. I'm Miriam, and today we're going to be looking at farming rules for water and what they mean for farmers and land managers. To tell us more about these rules and their implications, we'll be hearing from Zanita Markham from our Environment and Buildings team, and Hannah Haslock and Jackie Vale from the Environment Agency. As usual, we'll also have a quick update on the pig market, this month from Felicity, one of our analysts. She'll be considering how China could fill its pork deficit. But first, let's hear from Zanita.
Rules for farmers and land managers to prevent water pollution, known as Farming Rules for Water, first came out in April 2018. The regulation recognises the efforts of those already taking steps to protect water quality and offers a new approach to regulation by standardising good farming practices. The rules are set out to prevent manure, fertiliser and soil getting into watercourses. These rules apply to farming and horticultural practices in England, such as using and storing organic manure or manufactured fertiliser, planting and harvesting, soil management, and managing livestock on your lands. The rules also apply if you are in an NVZ or receive funding from the Basic Payment Scheme, Countryside Stewardship or Environmental Stewardship. So today we are focusing on what the rules mean to farmers and pig producers in particular, and what you can do to meet the rules with practices to keep soil on the land, tips on matching nutrients to crops and soil needs, and how to keep livestock, fertilisers and manures out of the water. Today I'm speaking to Hannah Haslock and Jackie Vale, both senior advisors for the Environment and Business Agricultural team at the Environment Agency, to have a refresher of the rules, what they mean to you, and what the future of water protection on farms may look like. Would you mind telling us about your job roles and the type of projects you're working on?
Yeah, morning. Hello, my name's Jackie Vale. I'm the Environment Agency's national lead for implementing the Farming Rules for Water, and I also look after the Environment Agency's interests in catchment-sensitive farming. I work with colleagues across the Environment Agency, with Natural England, with DEFRA, and also with our external stakeholders, including the AHDB.
Hello there, I'm Hannah Haslock. I'm supporting the continued implementation of the Farming Rules for Water, leading on communications and engagement. In addition, I'm also leading the update to the key actions for farmers and lead on pesticides for the team. I work within the market-led approach programme, looking at, for example, how assurance schemes, businesses and the supply chain can support our objectives.
Okay, so Farming Rules for Water were introduced in 2018. Can you tell us how the legislation came about and summarise the main principles?
So the Farming Rules for Water contribute towards the goal of the 25-year environment plan, which is to improve 3/4 of our water bodies to their natural state. The rules are expected to improve water quality by reducing concentrations of nitrates, phosphorus, sediment and faecal indicator organisms, improving biodiversity and benefiting protected sites such as SSSIs and Natura 2000 sites. Farmers and land managers will be able to use their knowledge of what's best for their land, for example, by deciding when it is safe to spread fertilisers and organic manures. The rules introduce a new approach to regulating farm practices that in time might be rolled out to other environmental impacts. And the main purposes are quite simple: keep soil on the land, match nutrients to crop and soil needs, and keep livestock, fertilisers and manures out of the water. The Farming Rules for Water were drawn up with the farming and environment stakeholders to build on the good progress that a great many farmers have already made in tackling pollution. The new rules have potential to benefit farmers as well as the water environment, as they will establish a regulatory level playing field for all farmers by helping protect the water environment, saving farm businesses money from better resource efficiency and improving resilience.
Thanks. Can you explain some of the benefits farmers may see by following the rules? And are there any rules cost beneficial to farmers?
There are many benefits to the farmers in following the rules. These include efficiency, business resilience, and protecting the farm environment. The rules could help farm businesses save money and time, as Hannah's just mentioned, through improved resource efficiency and increasing their resilience. For example, the Farming Rules for Water aim to prevent diffuse water pollution, by only applying the right amount of fertiliser to meet your soil or crop needs. The rules reinforce the message also that organic manures are a valuable resource to improve soil productivity and crop yield. By using the organic manures, farmers can make savings in the amount of money they actually spend on buying fertilisers. By doing this, they will make those resource efficiency savings. In terms of business resilience, farmers will be able to keep the soil and nutrients on the field, and this improves their productivity, reduces their costs, and makes the business more resilient, particularly to the threats imposed by a changing climate. Protecting the farm environment. By protecting that, they're looking after biodiversity and the essential resources of soil, water and air that everybody needs. They also will be able to know what's best for their own land. Farmers and land managers will use their own knowledge of what is best for them, and it's not for us to tell them how to farm, and this will help reduce agricultural diffuse pollution.
And what about the environment? What are the environmental benefits?
So farmers managing the land have a key role to play in protecting our water quality. A particular challenge for farming is diffuse water pollution, numerous small-scale losses that together damage the quality of our rivers and lakes and seas. Clean water is essential for life. It benefits tourism, helps fishing and shellfish businesses, reduces the cost of drinking water and enables biodiversity to thrive. The new rules will help protect the water environment. So reducing soil erosion and runoff means fewer nutrients and other pollutants going into the water environment, which otherwise could have reduced water quality and damaged ecology, for example, smothering fish spawning areas or causing algal growth.
So if I'm a farmer, what do I need to be doing right now, especially with harvest in mind?
As we've already described, the rules are not prescriptive and they're outcome based. It's not therefore for us to tell farmers and growers how to do their farming. What we would like them to think about, though, along with their advisors and anyone else who spreads material to land, is to be thinking about what they're doing so that they don't find themselves on the wrong side of the rules. They should make sure that they have up-to-date soil samples for their cultivated fields, that they have planned what materials they're going to spread on the land, and that they have sufficient storage in good condition to manage those spreading activities. If they're accepting materials to be spread that come off farm, they should be having conversations with their producers and contractors to make sure that they know what is going to be spread, where it's going to be spread, and when. They should also be thinking perhaps about the unexpected, adverse weather conditions, flooding, for example.
The rules mention being self-aware of risks. How does this make the rules less prescriptive than other regulations or rules?
The farming rules for water are actually a new way of working with farmers and land managers compared to other regulations. They're less prescriptive and they're based on achieving water quality outcomes. They require farmers themselves to manage the risks from their farm to water quality and to decide what actions to take to prevent pollution. Many of the rules allow farmers to determine the right actions to take for their land to avoid pollution, although there are some conditions that they have to comply with, such as where they place their livestock feeders. Farmers must decide what will work best for their land to avoid water pollution. It's up to the farmers and land managers to decide on the right time and the right place to spread fertilisers, store manures and manage livestock, although there are some minimum separation distances to protect inland waters and coastal waters. We expect farmers will use their knowledge of their own land to decide when weather and soil conditions might mean a higher risk of pollution and what actions they need to take in response, for example, by not spreading on snow-covered or waterlogged land.
What are some of the reasonable precautions farmers can take in the first instance? And could you give us some examples in three areas? The first being applying organic manures and manufactured fertilisers, the second, soil management, and the third, livestock management.
Okay, yeah, as mentioned before, the new rules require farmers to keep soil on the land, match nutrients to crop and soil needs, and keep fertilisers and manures out of the water. Reasonable precautions are the actions that a farmer can take to prevent significant risk of diffuse water pollution. By significant, we mean circumstances where there is a strong likelihood that diffuse pollution will occur from agricultural sources. Farmers can choose the actions they take to suit their farm business. The legislation is deliberately non-prescriptive in the actions a farmer may need to take. The legislation includes a non-exhaustive list of examples of reasonable precautions which can guide farmers. Say, for example, for applying organic manures and manufactured fertiliser, establish crops early in the autumn months and during dry conditions, plant headland rows and beds across the base of any sloping land, undersow or sow a cover crop to stabilise soil after harvest, remove compacted soil, establish graft buffer strips in the valleys or along contours or slopes or gateways. and for soil management, routinely check spreading precision equipment for leaks and correct calibration, incorporate organic manures and manufactured fertilisers into the soil within 12 hours of or as soon as possible after the application to the land. And for livestock management, move livestock regularly, erect fencing around controlled waters and winter livestock on well-drained level fields. Outdoor pig farmers can minimise the risks of erosion and runoff by making sure that the fields they keep livestock in are flatter and situated from any nearby streams or rivers.
Many farms are already compliant and actively change or monitor management to reduce instances of diffuse pollution. What else can farms do now and in the future?
Yeah, as you say, many farmers will be complying with a common baseline of environmental standards. For example, many farming rules for water are currently actually in the Code of Good Agricultural Practice, which has been around since 1985. And farmers in nitrate vulnerable zones or in the basic payment scheme should already meet many of these farming rules for water to qualify to get those payments. However, farmers should still be checking to see that they also comply with all of the farming rules for water. There's plenty of information and guidance online, and farmers should consult this or check with their advisors to make sure that they're going to be working within the rules. For example, they should make sure they've tested the soil on cultivated fields within the last 5 years, and they should know what their nutrient needs are going to be for their planned crops. Using that information, they should then be able to plan what materials need to be spread on their land and where it's going to come from. They should be talking to the producers of materials and their contractors to agree what can be spread on their land if it's coming from off-farm, when it can be spread and where it can be spread. The farming rules apply to the farmer or the land manager, so it's got to be in their interest to make sure that the materials they're spreading on their land are for crop and soil need and they are not going to cause significant diffuse water pollution. If they're actually producing manures or slurries, they need to make sure that they've got sufficient storage so that they can be spread at appropriate times, and if they don't, to start planning what they are going to do with that material. That could include finding alternative land for spreading or building more storage. I mean, clearly that can't happen overnight, and we will work with the farmers to help them comply with the rules. They should also be maintaining their equipment and ensure that it's calibrated so that they're spreading their manures and their fertilisers accurately.
So, how are the rules enforced?
The Environment Agency is responsible for enforcing the regulations underpinning the farming rules for water. The rules encourage a collaborative approach to ensure all farmers in England meet a basic standard of good practice, underpinned by legal requirements. The emphasis will be advising farmers what they must do to meet the standard before any enforcement action is considered. We fully intend to work with farmers to help them comply. However, we expect them to work with us too and have good intentions to meet the requirements. We do have enforcement options available to us to use, which will be taken on a case-by-case basis. They range from warning letters and civil sanctions, including financial penalties and formal notices, through to criminal prosecution. But prosecution is only likely for the most serious and persistent offences.
Okay. Will compliance with the rules be inspected, or are farmers expected to provide evidence of compliance?
Right. The Environment Agency is going to be on site for a number of reasons, including planned inspections or possibly in response to reported pollution incidents. Whilst we're on a farm, we would expect the farmer to be able to provide information to demonstrate compliance with the rules, for example, soil test results and their fertiliser plans.
Are there any quick tools or guides available for farmers to ensure they are compliant, and where do they find these?
Yes, there is a wealth of information online, directly on gov.uk or from the Farming Advice Service, or through farmers' own unions and trade bodies, for example.
The Environment Agency is able to advise farmers on how to comply with the new regulations and to help farmers understand them. How should they go about getting in touch?
Farmers can call our National Customer Contact Centre on 03 708 506 506 for general inquiries, or they can be put through to the local office. Our local officers would also be very willing to help provide any advice and guidance that they may need insofar as they can. They can also look to going to their own advisors as well. Also, if you happen to be in a priority area for catchment-sensitive farming, do look out for events and contact your local catchment-sensitive farming officer for advice as well.
Okay. And finally, is there any funding out there or schemes that farmers should apply for to help them improve practices?
Farming Rules for Water are a part of a whole package of measures to help farmers and land managers look after the environment. The government is also investing £400 million through countryside stewardship, which supports farmers in creating or restoring precious habitats. For example, funding may be available for fencing watercourses to prevent pollution caused by livestock. There is also a £12 million farm ammonia reduction grant to incentivise farmers to tackle agricultural emissions. There are actually four DEFRA programmes under which farmers can get advice and support that will help them address pollution and adjust to the new rules. So as Jackie mentioned about catchment-sensitive farming, DEFRA, Natural England and the Environment Agency offers farms in priority areas free advice as well as support for countryside stewardship grants. Farmers could also get involved in the Catchment-Based Approach Partnership programme. This aims to develop and deliver plans to improve the water environment. The 100-plus catchment partnerships provide support and guidance to farmers, helping them establish more sustainable and resource-efficient practices. There's the Farming Advice Service. It's a service funded by DEFRA to help farmers understand and meet the requirements of cross-compliance, greening, the basic payment scheme, and the European directives on water protection and sustainable pesticide use. This also includes specific advice on and information on the Farming Rules for Water. DEFRA, the Environment Agency, Natural England and the Rural Payments Agency have launched a new scheme under the RDPE, the Rural Development Programme for England, called the Water Environment Grant to fund improvements to the water environment. There are also industry-led initiatives to help farmers improve their practices. So FACTS, for example, provide the Register of Professionally Qualified Advisors. The Campaign for the Farmed Environment helps farming businesses by signposting to best practice in soil management, crop nutrition and pesticide use. And Tried and Tested is an initiative of the agricultural industry with support from catchment-sensitive farming, helping farmers to improve nutrient management planning through a toolkit. And then finally, the Nutrient Management Guide, RP209, hosted by the Agricultural and Horticultural Development Board, providing guidelines for crop nutrient requirements and the nutrient content of organic materials.
Thank you both. It's been great to catch up with you today, and hopefully we've addressed a lot of the questions that our listeners might have had. For anybody who'd like to know a little bit more about this topic, there's more information on the AHDB website, along with the Environment Agency and DEFRA websites, along with some more practical examples of what people can do to remain compliant. We have also created a cab sticker for reminding farmers of distances from watercourses that any muck heaps should be. This will be available in July's Pigworld magazine, and stickers can also be ordered directly from us using the contact details in today's show notes. As Hannah mentioned, the RB209 Nutrient Management Guide also has lots of guidance on making the most of organic materials and balancing the benefits of fertiliser against the costs. There's lots more useful information and guidance on the Great Soils website. For any further questions, you can speak to your local EA officer or contact one of the Environment and Buildings team here at HDB.
Visit ahdb.org.uk for all the latest news, research and information, and follow us on Twitter at @thehdb to stay up to date.
You can find some useful links in today's show notes, but before we wrap up, Felicity Rusk is going to give a quick update on the pig market and look at how China could fill its pork deficit following the drop in production which has resulted from African swine fever.
Hello and welcome to the July edition of Pork Talk. Last month, we spoke about how the outbreak of African swine fever in China has influenced markets. With the disease forecast to drive a sharp drop in Chinese pork production this year, we will take a look at how China might be expected to fill its pork deficit. The latest estimates suggest that China could have up to a 16 million tonne deficit of pork supplies by the end of this year. This is around 70% of what the EU produced last year. Pork and pig offal account for over a third of the protein eaten by Chinese consumers. The disease outbreak has shaken consumer confidence, particularly over food safety concerns, despite the disease being harmless to humans. As a result, Chinese pork consumption is estimated to have fallen by up to 15% this year. But even with the lower demand, China will still be short of pork. So where will it turn? The EU is already the largest exporter of pork to China, and so is poised to benefit from the increase in import demand. Spain in particular is in a good position to react as its pork sector continues to expand. Elsewhere, pig herds across Europe have been contracting, but in the longer term, the larger exporting countries in Northwest Europe are expected to increase their herd sizes once again in response to the rising demand. Of course, the current positive market sentiment will only last if the ASF outbreak within Europe remains isolated. Despite ongoing trade disputes, China remains one of the key export destinations for US pork. Whilst US pork exports to China have fallen by 4% this year, this is relatively small when considering that US pork is now subject to a 62% import tariff in China. Strong export growth is expected in the second half this year, once the Chinese cold stores are depleted. And this will only be stronger if the trade dispute is resolved. Elsewhere, Canadian pork exports in China have already increased by over 50% this year. However, limited herd growth and tight pork supplies may further restrict growth in the future. Meanwhile, Brazil is also expected to be a key player due to strong production growth and better producer returns. The impacts of the outbreak are being felt in many other global markets. Chinese consumers are increasingly turning to other sources of protein. We expect that beef, lamb, and dairy markets will benefit from increased Chinese consumption. However, this is also likely to stretch to both poultry and fish markets as well. While global production of beef, poultry, and sheep meat are expected to increase this year, it's not enough to compensate for the drop in pig meat production. As a result, global meat production is forecast to fall by 0.2% this year. This tightness is likely to support protein markets at a global level. To keep up to date with the latest price movements and pork market trends, please visit the prices and stats section of the AHDB Pork website to get the most up-to-date information, or subscribe to the new AHDB Pork weekly newsletter.
Aisha from our horticulture team is now here to tell us about the next podcast.
In the next horticulture edition, we'll be giving you an update on an HDB-funded project called Amber, which is all about aiming to identify practical ways for growers to improve the performance of biopesticides in their crop protection programs. So please make sure to tune in to our next episode on the 9th of July.
Thanks, Aisha. So that's all for today. Thank you for listening. And if you haven't already done so, why not subscribe so you don't miss future episodes? It would also be great if you could share the podcast with friends and colleagues. So until next time, bye for now.